The sixth case of the morning is number 05-1673, United States against Salazar. Mr. Anderson.
Excuse me. May it please the court, I'm Kent Anderson with the Federal Public Defender's Office of the Central District of Illinois, representing the appellant Julian Salazar. In this case, Mr. Salazar pled guilty to being a felon in possession of a firearm, and in exchange for that plea, the government agreed to recommend a sentence at the low end of the guideline range of 108 to 120 months. The government did pay lip service to that recommendation by technically making it at the sentencing hearing, but then it breached the plea agreement by undercutting its recommendation with its argument. It said that Mr. Salazar was a cold-blooded killer, which could have no effect other than to encourage the maximum sentence. And the fact, Mr.
There was no objection at trial, am I correct?
That is correct.
Depending on plain error, is that that's your...
That is correct, yes.
Why is this error plain?
Well, because it's both an error, it's obvious, and
obvious about it? It's not... Not that obvious, or we wouldn't be here considering all the ramifications, I think.
Well, probably the only reason we are is that somehow it slipped by trial counsel. I don't, in the heat of the moment.
But the reason it's not obvious, in part, is, as you just said, the government said that they would recommend that the defendant be sentenced at the low end of the guideline range, then states the range 108 to 120. So the government actually says what they promised to say, and then they go on to say that is an appropriate sentence. And so maybe there's some ambiguity in this, in that the rest of this little short discussion appears to be talking about the range as opposed to the low end. But the recommendation, as promised, is made. And maybe if an objection had been made, there would have been more to talk about, but what's plain about this statement that's wrong?
Well, what, frankly, calling somebody a cold-blooded killer is not very conducive to recommending a lower sentence, and once the judge found the facts in support of the enhancements, he wasn't going to go any lower than the guidelines as a practical matter.
Well, he says that. He actually says he's not really focusing on statutory maximum, but he says if the guidelines were still binding, I would have departed upward. So there's another point to be made in your plain error argument, which is how can there be prejudice even if there were error here?
Because the focus should be on what the government did in breach of the plea agreement, which was bargained for by Mr. Salazar, not on the unbargained for effect on the district judge. The bargain wasn't that the government's recommendation would be successful, but that they would make it and that they wouldn't undercut it.
But there's no reason to think that the district judge cared what the government was saying beyond what, I mean, they stick with the guideline range. The judge gives him the 120-month sentence. He says he wishes he could have gone higher.
Well, we don't know whether the district judge was influenced or not. He relied on essentially the same reasons cited by the government in support of his sentence. But more importantly, as the Fifth Circuit recently reiterated, a breach can constitute plain error without regard to whether the sentencing judge was influenced by the government's actions.
But I think you're arguing an extreme point if you think under plain error review there's no requirement to show prejudice to the defendant from the error that you are arguing was made and was plain and obvious. Seems to me it's pretty clear from a lot of cases that you do have to show prejudice.
Well, the prejudice was the government not complying with its agreement. As I said, there wasn't an agreement that the court would impose a specific sentence. If there had been, then that would be another issue. The agreement was for what the government would do, not for...
That's not prejudice in the sense that the cases talk about it. There has to be some probability that the outcome was different.
It is prejudice in the sense that most of the cases talk about. The only case that I find that doesn't is the one from this circuit, De Aguillon, which makes perfect sense in that context because the district judge didn't follow the government's recommendation. But when the district judge does what the government asks, whether because of the recommendation or not, then it doesn't make so much sense. The court should look to one of the standards for plain error that it recently set forth in Palladino. It didn't decide which was appropriate in that case, and it doesn't matter in this one either whether the right is important or whether it may have made a difference. The Supreme Court in Santabello established the importance of the right, also showed that the focus should be on what the government did rather than on the effect of it had on the district judge. That wasn't a plain error case, true, but if the focus was on what the effect on the judge, it would have been harmless error in that case. And
well, in Palladino, of course, we didn't know anything about what the judge would have thought because of Booker. So, you know, we asked, and some of the Palladino remands have resulted in resentencing, and many of them have not, depending on what the district judges have said. I don't think Palladino can be read so broadly as to say that there's always prejudice from errors.
No, I was simply citing it for its alternative formulations of what affects substantial rights, which it took from the Supreme Court cases, and in that case said, assuming there's a difference between these two standards, it doesn't matter for that case, and it wouldn't matter in this case either, because it may very well have made a difference, which is the other alternative standard. We don't know whether it influenced the district judge. He did what the government asked, so it may very well have. The prosecutor certainly thought that his statements would have an effect, and as the 11th Circuit found in Taylor, this court shouldn't now second-guess the prosecutor's on-the-spot decision.
It's just that when the district judge actually says on the record, you know, what he would have wanted to do, it seems to me a pretty clear signal that he's making up his own mind.
Well, and he may have done that anyhow. On the other hand, he may have been influenced to that choice by the government's argument. He may obviously wasn't going to go any lower than the 108 months with or without the government's argument. That wasn't going to happen in this case. But he could have been on the fence about the 108 or perhaps something in between without the government's argument, and that pushed him over the edge. All we know is what he said he would have done, not why he was making that decision. And therefore, it did affect Mr. Salazar's substantial rights for the government not to completely comply with their promise, and it affected the fairness, integrity, and public reputation of judicial proceedings, because as the Fourth Circuit found, breaches by the government involve the honor of the government and the fair and effective administration of justice. Therefore, this court should send the case back to the district court for either resentencing by a different district judge with specific performance, or give Mr. Salazar the option of choosing that or withdrawing his plea agreement with plea. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. We'll hear now from Mr. Pope.
Good morning. Patrick Pope on behalf of the United States. Defendant Salazar is complaining about a three-word phrase in a one-paragraph argument made by the government that took significantly less than a minute to say. On its face, the government's argument did not constitute error, let alone plain error. When viewed in context of the sentencing, and specifically the invitation and the statement by the district court immediately prior to the government's argument, the conclusion is even more evident. Unless there are any specific questions from the panel, the government will rest on its brief.
Apparently not, Mr. Pope. Thank you.
Thank you.
You have 2 minutes, Mr. Anderson.
Just briefly with respect to the context, the fact is the prosecutor had already called Mr. Salazar cold-blooded when arguing in support of the attempted murder cross-reference, and so that shows that certainly at that point when he said almost exactly the same thing, he wasn't focused on the possibility of a non-guideline sentence, and that's reinforced by the fact that the prosecutor later never mentioned the possibility of a non-guideline sentence as a contrast to the low end of the range. If he had done so, maybe his argument would have been understandable. Who knows? The fact is he didn't, so it's hard to judge. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Thank you to all counsel in the case. The case will be taken under advisement.